Okay, David Miller with Purple Pawn here, and I'm here with Eric Mona of Paizo. And first question I have for you is more of a general one. If you had to give a brief, like, State of the Union type assessment of Paizo and Pathfinder in particular, how would you describe the situation?
I would say that the Pathfinder RPG, the Pathfinder adventure card game, the Pathfinder brand in general is doing better than it's ever done before. We're having fantastic response to our RPG products and to our adventure card game. We released the adventure card game last year, which opened that new card game sort of category for us. And what we're finding is that the Venn diagram of card gamers and RPG gamers overlaps a little bit less than we thought it would.
Okay.
So that game is bringing a new group of customers to Pathfinder across the board. In the meantime, we have sold more core rulebooks for the RPG every year than we did the year before since it came out.
Okay.
We've now got about 65,000 registered gamers in our Pathfinder Society organized play program all around the world. We have over 150 what we call venture captains and venture lieutenants. They're basically regional coordinators for the campaign. It's growing and growing and growing. Pathfinder continues to get bigger and bigger. Our sales August to August from last year are up in the RPG category despite, you know, increased competition. So we're really, really happy. The state of the union is strong.
Okay. And how would you, the game is, the Pathfinder game has been out certainly for a while now.
Yeah, since 2009 is when
And over the time, you've released a number of supplements and other books. But if you had to give it, like, a description, you know, what is it that distinguishes Pathfinder from, as you say, all those other competition?
I think
what's the draw in Pathfinder? What's the character of Pathfinder that distinguishes it?
I think one of the main appeals of Pathfinder is that the rule set is robust enough that it can accommodate pretty much any type of character you want, right? So you're not picking between, I'm going to play a fighter who's the same as every other fighter, or a cleric, or a rogue, or a wizard.
Mm-hmm.
There's now coming up on 30 different classes that you can choose from. There's multiple different what we call archetypes that allow you to modify those classes by trading out key powers. The new book that we're putting out at this show, The Advanced Class Guide, takes two character concepts and kind of pushes them together. So you might have, like, the Skald, who takes elements of a barbarian with the rage power and elements of the bard with the musicality and the inspiring your party. And the Skald is able to sing songs of battle that inspires, like, a rage in the rest of the party. So you can even do these new, what we call hybrid classes, that are like two-in-one sort of classes. So there's unlimited modularity and unlimited combinations that can allow you to find a rules expression for the hero that you have in your head. You're not led by the rules as much as the rules kind of are following your character concepts. So that's a huge part of Pathfinder's success. I think in terms of thematics, the thematics are very mainline fantasy. You know, they it comes from a tradition of fantasy gaming going back to the very beginning. We have elves and dwarves and dragons and things like that. And yet, we also are not afraid to take chances. We, last year in the Reign of Winter Adventure Path, sent characters to 1917 Earth in one adventure called Rasputin Must Die.
Mm-hmm.
And they fought against the Russian mystic Rasputin, who turned out to be a son of the multi-planetary witch queen Baba Yaga, you know, who's long been a part of fantasy gaming. And so, and people reacted really, really well to that. And this show, we're also debuting an adventure path called the Iron Gods Adventure Path,
mm-hmm.
which is a science fantasy adventure path. The sort of elevator pitch for it that we use is Expedition to the Barrier Peaks meets Thundar the Barbarian, which I now realize are two references that would go way over the heads of anyone under the age of 25, but,
I'm a big fan of Expedition to the Barrier Peaks. I've heard of, but don't know much about Thundar.
Thundar the Barbarian, it's a world of savagery and super science, right? It's basically high-tech trappings, but in a low-tech world. So it's not, strictly speaking, a science fiction campaign.
Right.
It's a campaign in which what happens if a giant spaceship crashed in a sort of Conan the Barbarian style landscape 1,000 years ago, and ever since people have been raiding these metal dungeons for weird artifacts and drinking fuel and things like that, and what happens over the course of that time, how does that become a part of that culture, and what happens specifically in the Iron Gods, what happens when one of the artificial intelligences that helps to fuel the ship becomes not only sentient but becomes divine and is able to grant spells to clerics through the magical sort of metaphysics of the Pathfinder rules engine. What does that mean about faith? What does that mean about gods? What does that mean for the land of Numeria? And that's what Iron Gods is all about. And we're publishing, like, we've got a book called The Technology Guide that goes with it, that's got laser guns and jetpacks and plasma cannons and graviton pistols and all kinds of awesome stuff. And we have rules as well for, like, what happens when that stuff is degraded by time. So it's not just I'm going to load up with laser rifles and go in and destroy every dungeon. It might be I made to make a roll to make sure I don't shoot myself in the face with this thing, or it doesn't blow up in my hands or whatever. So what we're finding, and it's early yet, but what we're finding is people are really embracing when we kind of go outside the mainstream a little bit. And yet I think because our staff and the people who not only write but who edit and plan our books have all been gaming pretty much their whole lives, we all, I think, have a very clear understanding of what that kind of main, you know, mainspring of fantasy is.
Right. A good, so for solid example, basis.
Right. So, for example, up. Right after the Iron Gods adventure path, we're following that with one called Giant Slayer, where it's all going to be like, you know, swords, axes, giants, orcs. And so one of the things we like about Pathfinder is it kind of has something for everybody.
Okay. And then the card game. What? How's that going?
It's going fantastically. The adventure card game came out at Gen Con last year. It sold out in like a day. It subsequently spent almost the entire year near the top of the Board Game Geek hot list. People really love the adventure card game. I think the adventure card game's got, I'm going to say, three really strong qualities to it that make it very popular. The first being, it's very much like a tabletop RPG, but it doesn't require a GM. You don't have to read a 600-page manual to understand how to play. And yet you play characters going on adventures, exploring strange locations, fighting monsters, getting treasure. So a lot of the visceral kind of feel of a tabletop RPG adventure is there, but without some of the hassle or the system mastery that a big book like Pathfinder RPG requires. And so it's much more accessible for people. And I think that's the first thing. I think the second thing is that the rules themselves are pretty easy. So it's got thematics, gives you what you want out of an RPG type session. It's got really simple to pick up rules. And then the third thing is it's cooperative. It's not an antagonistic game. It's a game you play with your friends to try to kind of beat the deck itself. And I think that that's a pretty unusual element to card games. And I think that actually, now that I'm thinking about it, there's a fourth element to it that's very unusual for card games. And that's that after each roughly hour-long scenario that you play, your character goes up basically in level. So you get to modify your character as you play. Your character gets better equipment, gets better powers. Very much like a tabletop RPG, but it's all done on cards.
And you said you're finding that it's a different group of players?
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously a lot of crossover, but there's less crossover than I would have thought. I think that, you know, the game is being embraced by people who maybe don't have the time to get a big RPG campaign together. You know, generally speaking, when you're playing an RPG, you're playing 3 hours, 4 hours, 5 hours at a time.
Right.
Pathfinder Adventure Card Game, you can do a scenario of 45 minutes, hour and a half, somewhere in there. So I think it's just easier for people to get together. I think that there's people who kind of consider themselves board gamers who wouldn't necessarily want to buy into a role-playing game, but they like the idea of, oh, I'm going to be an elf, and I'm going to go slay the dragon, and I'm going to, you know, get this treasure. And they like the themes of it. And so this allows them to kind of get access to Pathfinder. I think a lot of those people have been curious about Pathfinder, heard about it. I mean, it's been a leading brand in the tabletop RPG side of the business for a long time. But if they didn't really consider themselves RPG players, maybe they haven't felt really that would have been the best choice for them. And then now we put out the card game and they're like, yeah, that's my speed. And it's become really, really popular.
And I wanted to ask you about something else recently with the iconic characters.
Uh-huh.
You released a story of a transgendered iconic character.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the story behind doing that?
The story behind that is that really Paizo as a company is strongly supportive of diversity. You know, from the very beginning, we wanted to make sure that the iconic characters we use in particular, but also the whole world that we do, have representative characters of a variety of sort of real world ethnicities. Because we feel like if anyone, no matter who you are, if you come to the game, you should feel welcome in the game and you should feel at home. And so, you know, it's really important to us that we have, women, female characters that are portrayed as strong and that are capable adventurers in their own right. And they're not all wearing bikinis and, you know, they're not sex objects, they're adventurers, right? And so in doing that, we went through and we wanted to make sure we had a male and a female of every one of the core races and every one of the races being like elf, dwarf, whatever. Right. And then a variety of ethnicities. And as we were doing that, you know, it occurred to us that there was a real opportunity to create a character that would signal inclusiveness to a group that is not generally considered, you know, is not really considered, right. Frankly. And we have people on the Paizo staff who are transgendered. We know a lot of gamers who, for whatever reason, gaming seems to be a safe harbor for a lot of people like that. And we just thought it would make a lot of sense, and we thought it would be the right thing to do to have that character be, have that player type represented among our iconic characters. So we did it.
Very good. And back to sort of another more business type question.
Can I actually point out one other thing that's interesting, just by way of context? As we were doing that, our editor-in-chief, Wesley Snyder, just because he was kind of interested to look himself, decided to go back to the very beginning of Pathfinder when we launched Pathfinder Adventure Path in 2007. Mm-hmm. And he created a list of, you have to look online, I can't remember if it's 50 or I think it might even be 100 sort of LGBTQ characters that we've had in our books.
Oh, really?
Going back all the way to the very beginning. And so it's not, this is the most high profile thing that we've done to show inclusiveness, but it's just the latest in a long trend of things that we've done. And so if you're looking for an angle for that, I would encourage you to check out that list. It's pretty widely available online.
Okay. You've had a number of, a few printing type problems recently. Mm. How does that get to you? You know, I understand that some things with the card game, you had certain cards that weren't available in time for the show.
Yeah, except we actually, our manufacturer pulled off a miracle and we had all those cards here.
You got them here in time.
They're all here. We didn't miss a beat there. I think they weren't out for the first 10 minutes or so today. Mm-hmm. But those are going really, really well. And
after opening, they came in.
Yep. They had guaranteed delivery at 8 a.m. today. And we have all seven of the class decks here. So that was one of those things where it was disappointing. And then, you know, one of the things that's worth remembering is that the people who manufacture our products are just as professional as the people who edit and write them.
Right.
And so they were able to figure out a way to make what could have been a really bad situation a great situation.
Right. And you
and
had
so that's fantastic.
One of the books, is it the advanced class guide? So there's a
on the advanced class guide, which is, there's not really an excuse for it. It just, it got changed at the last second when, after all of our approval processes, we have extensive, like, seven different people sign off on every little element of the book, and then that hits the file that goes to the printer. The problem is we don't have extensive checkoffs after that point because it hasn't really come up that often. So it went to the printer. The printer said, oh, can you fix, you know, some of the file, whatever, the bleed on this page or whatever. Came back to us. Our graphic designer fixed it up. And in doing so, accidentally changed the link to the image. So it linked a very similar looking Pathfinder Adventure Path logo on a Pathfinder role-playing game product. And we didn't notice it when they sent us the printer's proof. It's totally our fault. It was just a dumb mistake. And fortunately, the logos are so similar that even when I knew what happened, we went around the office and were like, what do you think about this cover? And people were like, it's great. You know, and it's like, did you notice there's the wrong logo? And they say, oh, no, I didn't notice that. And I was like, yeah, neither did we.
You'll get the fans.
It's
there.
And one of the things that's really cool about it, I think Paizo's got a relationship with its players where we just kind of came out and said, look, We messed up, you know, and we could fix this. We could have fixed this. It would have cost us about $100,000 to do that.
Right.
And ultimately we weren't, you know, it was like, I'm not sure what my pride is worth, but I know it's not worth $100,000 because there's so many better things we can do with that money. And the
doesn't affect the play of the game.
It doesn't, it, you know, it's literally like a couple of square inches on the cover. The spine is right. The back cover is right. The cover title page is right. That every page is right. It's just one. It happens to be a very prominent and very embarrassing mistake.
How does that feel as part of your...
It sucks.
You know,
I mean, it's terrible. But it's going to happen every once
right.
in a while, you know. And despite the best efforts that we have, every once in a while something we regret gets out. And we do our best to fix it the next time we print it. I was gratified by the response of a lot of the Pathfinder fans, which was like, you made the right decision. I don't care at all about the logo. I just want the new classes or whatever. And hopefully, you know, they meant it. And we certainly haven't seen any depression in the sales, you know, of the book here so far. So
that's good. But I guess
better luck next time.
Must be a frustrating part of the job when you have those kinds of things.
You've got luckily, it has happened so rarely that I don't have a prepared response for it.
Right.
So it was frustrating, but at the end of the day, you just got to move on.
Okay. And you said you have a new a digital version of the card game?
Yes. Yeah. Yesterday, we announced a strategic partnership with Obsidian Entertainment, who is a very prominent computer game developer.
Mm-hmm.
And the first of many projects that we'll be working on together is the digital translation of the Pathfinder Adventure card game, The Rise of the Rune Lords campaign that came out last year. They're demoing it here in the corner. I encourage you to check that out. And it's really going to be awesome. You know, I mean, it's like an iPad app. They're hoping to expand to other platforms as well, and it plays a little bit like a card game. You're throwing cards around. You can play multiplayer, you can play single player, and you know, one of the benefits is you don't have huge piles of cards that you have to sort or store or whatever. It's just all on your tablet.
And I gather to track that character progression that
that's
about.
All in the app as well.
And so it's basically a translation of the card game to electronic version.
Yep. And we hope to do like some, you know, bigger computer games with them as well. That's all sort of in the planning stages.
So what's the next big project, the next thing you're most excited about coming up?
I am really excited about two things, I think. So much exciting stuff has happened, like, in the last couple of days. I now have to think the next step, right? But the next two
You get a couple days off after Gen Con.
Right.
You can calm.
Not
relax.
Really.
No?
No. The projects that I'm most excited about now are the next two hardcover books we're going to be putting out. We're doing, in October, a book called The Monster Codex, which takes 20 of the most commonly encountered monster types in our game, goblins, orcs, frost giants, vampires, that kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
and presents a chapter on each one and gives like about a dozen stat blocks of like grunts of that type, leaders, you know, spellcasters, whatever, and gives a GM pretty much everything he needs to run an orc adventure, an orc campaign. You know, one of the things about the Pathfinder Bestiary, our main monster book, is there's an entry for orc, you know?
Right.
It is a first level orc warrior. So if you want to make an orc cleric, you kind of have to do that yourself.
Right.
And I think our role as a RPG publisher should be to take some of that work off of your plate so you can concentrate on the game and on making fun mm-hmm. stories. And so the Monster Codex is really going to do that. And each character is lavishly illustrated. It's a beautiful book. Really, really excited about that. And then a book that's coming out in December that's actually was originally going to come out in the spring, but we kept holding on to it because it was so important that we get it right, is called The Strategy Guide. Strategy Guide is a $30 hardcover book that is basically a guide to the Pathfinder role-playing game. So when we created the core rulebook, it was an adaptation of the Open Game licensed 3.5 with a whole bunch of new stuff. But the primary audience for that game was people who were playing 3.5 already, people who in many cases had been gamers for their whole life. And as Pathfinder has grown, and as it's become, you know, it's for the last 4 years, pretty much the dominant RPG in the category, we've started to feel more and more of a responsibility to make the game easier to understand for brand new players, easier to explain all the stuff instead of just assuming that you know what levels are, how to read a chart about how to level up your character. That's a great example. You know, in the Pathfinder core rulebook, there's 20 line chart, you know, and it says, okay, second level, plus two in this saving throw, plus one in your base attack bonus, and you get these new spells. And then you third level, say plus one in your saving throw, but it never really explains explicitly on that page, oh, yet you add to the previous total, you're not changing, you know. So there's a lot that is not really explained and hasn't been explained for years and years with RPGs. And so the strategy guide really breaks it down. So there's a separate section for every level up that you do over the course of your career. You only have to read a small amount of information. All the context is provided for you. It starts with kind of a Cosmopolitan magazine quiz about what kind of character do you want to play.
Okay.
And then it leads you to what we call themes, which is a new concept in there. The themes then lead you to your class guide, and then that tells you how to make your character. And there's really step-by-step instructions about combat and magic as well. So it's not a replacement for the core rulebook, but it works with the core rulebook. And it's kind of a guide to how to get the most out of your Pathfinder players. It's not, or your Pathfinder characters. It's not an optimization guide. It's not about how to beat other people or how to have the most powerful character, but it's how to kind of understand the game. And that's really important for us as we continue to get new players and as we grow the game overall.
Sounds like a good
and just future in time for Christmas.
Perfect timing for that.
Yep.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah,
you've given
really
me
appreciate
a good background on
awesome.
Paizo.